Hello, and welcome to the 11th night of Millennial 2020, and this is the final night before Christmas, so Merry Christmas to everyone. Tonight I have four streams coming up. In 2 hours' time, it will be Frode Midyard, that's of Guide to Culture and the Scanza Forum. 2 hours after that, Charlemagne. And then 2 hours after that, Travis LeBlanc. And that will be a unique opportunity for people to hear him, because I don't think he's never done a stream before, and he says he's never going to do another one. So that will be quite a literally unique opportunity to hear him, Travis LeBlanc. But first, it's Thomas. Well, I'll say it in my dramatic way, which I always love, because his name lends itself to this. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Thomas Baden Rice. But I know it's properly pronounced Baden Rice, so I should really say that. Thomas Baden Rice. So welcome, Thomas, and thank you for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Well, thanks very much for having me on, Woz. It's a really great pleasure. I always think that you and I have some very, very good chats, and the problem is that most of them take place behind closed doors, and so the viewers don't get a chance to listen to what we often have to say. And the last time I came on Millennial, I made a point of talking about all the things that we disagreed on. And I promised myself after that if I came back on again, I would have like a cozy chit chat with you. Unfortunately, because of everything that's happened in 2020 and everything that I envisage happening in 2021, I think it really behoves me to come on here and talk about that kind of thing. And unfortunately, that might be a bit boring for you and your listeners, but I sort of feel obliged to do that.
I think you'll make it exciting. I'm confident that you'll do that. But yeah, you're right. I mean, just for the sake of it, I should say that Thomas and I do have chats on Telegram, and whenever we speak, we tend to talk for like 3 hours or 4 hours sometimes. It's not frequent, but whenever we do speak, there's so much that to say. It's very nice, and yeah, it's a shame that those aren't recorded. But I mean, this was what got me started with Skype. I eventually, because back in 2015, I was very often having conversations with a large range of people, especially Pale Hominid and Reactionary Expat, my two friends. And so eventually I just got an automatic Skype recorder to record everything. And then after the fact, I would say to them, so should we publish that or just discard it? And that was a solution. So, but yeah, because there is so much that gets said behind, in just casual conversation that gets lost.
Yeah, I remember in the early days of your channel that you would do that. You would put up those Skype. I think you had the symbol of the old telephone before those Skype calls. Yeah, they were good discussions. It seems like an entirely other era now. It's incredible how fast it all moves.
Oh, yeah. Well, do you want to take it away on that topic?
I'm a little bit confused. You want me to talk about my lecture?
Just how fast everything changes. I mean, if you compare 2015 with 2020, it really is. I mean, I can hardly believe that we're still on YouTube at this point. It almost feels like we shouldn't be at this point, because things have changed so much. I'm surprised, like, new platforms have emerged. And the culture, the world and politics have all just transformed out of recognition. So I'm surprised that there are still some consistencies with 2015, 2014. Yeah. But for now, at least, we are still on here. Maybe not by the end of this stream. But so I should say that, you describe yourself for the audience in your own terms.
Well, I don't know what to say. I mean, I'm a writer, an artist, and I guess I'm a scientist. I do this YouTube political stuff because I think it's very important. I'd like to think that the only reason I'm involved in YouTube politics is because anyone with common sense has to be involved with politics in this current crisis that we're facing in Western civilization. So I'd like to think I'm here just for that, and that if things were better, I would happily get out of all this political stuff, because I find it very, very stressful. And, I think it has taken a large, toll on me. But then again, there's no way in hell that people like me can fit in with normal society these days. We're all sort of outcast. My type of person is outcast. So inevitably I end up here. It's funny when I think back to those Skype recordings of you and Pale Hominid and the others, Reactionary Expat and Babylonian Hebrew and this kind of thing. It really seems like it was such a wonderful time. It's so strange how nostalgia works, but it seems like such a wonderful and better era compared to the mess that we're in now.
Yeah, there was a sense of stability then. We knew, you can always rewrite history when you remember it, but I think we did know that we were at the precipice of we were in a decline and things were about to get worse. I think we knew that, but things have got worse since then. That's what's happened. Mm-hmm. But also things have really accelerated. I mean, the way that the world changes from one year to the next now, in a way that I don't think it did in the 90s so much, or even the 2000s was very much a kind of rest period. I've said this before. I think that the 2000s was quite a very bland and empty decade. The only really technological change, innovations, social media, but not cultural change. That's another thing altogether, though. The point I'm making is that I think things have really picked up from 2010 onwards, and then really from 2015 onwards, and then again in this year, we've seen a staggering revolution in social life, culture, political, economic life, which I think is going to play out next in the coming years. But I think this was the nucleus of it. This was the catalyst all in this year.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes, indeed. It's incredible how things have changed. I mean, I think I know that you like the comedy One Foot in the Grave. And I was recently watching
All right. Yeah, it's quite funny. Yeah.
Well, but I think I was watching a Christmas special of that, and it was from the 1990s. And the thing is that, I mean, you and I don't think that the 90s was some kind of perfect era or that everything was great in the 90s. And yet they presented this wonderful kind of British Christmas time that was, that was involved in this show. They presented this and it reminded me of just how different things were back in the 90s, that back in the 90s, I still felt part of a nation, a kind of part of a nation that we came together at Christmas. And we sort of celebrated, everyone relaxed and celebrated the holiday together. And we all tuned in to the same things on the television. And yet, that was literally just the 90s. And it seems like another lifetime now. I mean, I won't be sitting down to watch anything on television this Christmas.
Well, yeah, I think another thing in that regard is that the internet took over from TV, so people don't sit down and watch things together anymore. Mm. But that's a parallel cause for this. The other cause is that we're simply much more atomized. It's not just the internet, live streaming replaces broadcast. It's that we don't seem to have a cohesive culture anymore. As you say, in the 90s, everyone knew what Christmas meant. Everyone, like, at a deep level and at a more superficial level, here's what we're going to do on Christmas. Everyone knew that. Everyone knew what Easter meant. You could go through 100 things, 100 things that everyone knew about being British and life in Britain. And it's one of the joys of multiculturalism that we no longer know any of these things.
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yes. And it's just, for me, it's just incredible how quickly it's all changed.
Yeah, the stability, that's the thing that I think that, as you say, the 90s, I know that the 90s wasn't a tremendous time. And I don't want to wind the clock back to the 90s. But sometimes I'd like to just go back and watch Red Dwarf in 1992, on the sofa with the fire on. And it was just tremendous then, it was lovely. It felt like safety compared to everything that's followed it. There's a huge amount that could be said about this.
Indeed, yes. Would you like me to say something more on that theme, or should I? I'm wary of the clock woes, and I don't want to waste your time. And I do feel like
loads of time. Don't worry, we've got we've been going for 10 minutes. I think it's fine so far, and we can go for like an hour and a half if you want. I don't mind.
I'm up for that. I know I used to work in Italy as an English teacher, and I'd have loads of students, and I would come and prep them for like individual oral exams. And I might have to speak to like 50 Italian kids in like, 7 hours. And it was effing exhausting. And
it was.
Yeah, it really was. And you have to pretend to be interested in everything, you know, that what they're saying, whereas in reality, you're not. It always reminds me of your situation with Milena Yule, where you have to sit and talk to all these guests.
Ah, but I find almost all of them interesting. Almost all of them. Yeah, I'm joking. No, I think almost always there's something that you can latch on to and find interesting. And I know that, you know, with you, there's plenty of stuff. As we've just demonstrated, we have this common thing about, you know, we're roughly the same age. So we grew up in the same Britain. I mean, for God's sake, you can probably remember the same, let's go on a sort of nostalgia tour just for the sake of it. You can probably remember the same TV shows like Maid Marian and Our Merry Men, Round the Twist, Going Live, Biker Grove, Grange Hill, all of these things that I grew up with that are probably quite strange to my younger viewers, that, you know, the younger millennials and the Zoomers won't really know what we're talking about. But I remember these things, and it's nice that you remember them too. You know, it's always nice to sort of, I don't know, to realize that, yes, okay, I'm getting older, but other people who are with me at the same time are also the same age as me now. So it's not like I'm alone. You know, we do have these things in common. We do have these things connecting us, and we can reminisce over these things. And the Crystal Maze, that's another one. Yeah, that was wonderful.
Yeah, indeed. I've often thought that if and when we get through this kind of political trauma, that when we come out on the other side of it, one thing I think which you would do very well is to do like a regular kind of nostalgia podcast for things that happened in the 90s or indeed in the 80s. But you mentioned Maid Marian there. That was, I loved Maid Marian. I thought it was really hilarious. And what I loved to do as a kid, and I think other people did this as well, is you used to make video recordings of the things which were on television, which you liked. So like you got one of those blank VHS tapes, and then, you know, you set up your video recorder, and you every week when the episode was on, you recorded it. And what I used to do is I used to cut from the Radio Times, I used to cut out like the title of the show, Maid Marian, and the photographs from it, and then you used to stick that onto the front of the VHS tape. And of course, it always went wrong, because if you set the video timer, it always cut out like the first minute or the first 2 minutes. And that obviously, you know, it was very, very frustrating. But you're back in the day, and Zoomers won't understand this, this was well before the time of DVDs or internet stuff. If you wanted to make your own version, your own like official copy of a TV series, you had to kind of do it yourself. And you ended up with all these kind of botched DIY tapes. So that was something which I really remember quite fondly now.
Oh, yeah. You know, I recorded Doctor Who, for one thing, religiously in its final year, 1989. I'm not talking about the new stuff. And I got all of that, and about half of the previous season, which is when I discovered it. And also films. You see, so that was how I watched those things and rewatched them like dozens of times, each episode on a VHS tape. And then with films, I've said this before, that I discovered The Shining via a VHS recording off TV. And I watched that God knows how many times. And then when I finally got it on DVD, it wasn't the same. It just wasn't the same to watch it with good quality of picture and audio. It didn't have the ad breaks. It didn't have the smudgy feel to it. And it was not right, you know. I still think that we lost something with VHS, you know, that it did have a, there was a thing, there was an experience that you and I undoubtedly had, and many other people had, of watching something on video that has just gone. It's something that was probably unique to our generation, actually.
Yes, yes. Did you do the kind of Friday night to the video club routine?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That was, a good family ritual, actually, which I really enjoyed when I was a kid.
It's you had to go to the video rental place.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Like, yeah. If you wanted videos in those days, you had to largely go to the local video shop and hire them. That was the way people did it. It makes you nostalgic for your childhood. It's the kind of thing which I guess makes you want to be a parent, because when I think about my sister now, she's got kids and they're sort of 10 and 11 and they regularly do these things, and it's a very cozy sort of treat to do.
It is, and I'm sure that kids today have their own equivalents of these experiences. There must be things like that happen that are magical to a child, in the way that those things were kind of magical to us, or at least we remember them as being magical. I think it's a lot of it is the mystery of the past, the mystery of your own life, the mystery of who you were and how did that actually affect you? How did that experience actually seem to you? But you can only remember versions of it, snatches of it. And I went home a few weeks ago and it was so intense. It was really a very intense experience, because things have changed in my town, my hometown, and in my family dramatically. And so I had to face the fact that things change. Things really do change. I mean, things don't last forever. Nothing lasts forever. And that's a terrifying thing. If you want the past to be reliable, if you want it to be something that you can always take comfort in, you're out of luck. And I think the only way to deal with that is, and it's a horrible sort of thing to say, but it's probably the truth, the only way to deal with that is to build the future.
Yeah.
You know, if you reside too much in the past, it's morbid, but it's also just, you're sort of setting yourself up for heartbreak. Now, I don't think I really do reside very much or too much in the past, but going home, you kind of expect, things will be roughly as they were, and oh fuck, they're really not. You know, I won't go into the details, but things have changed, and it was troubling, but also strangely beautiful as well. It was a very moving experience to walk these paths and stuff, and I put it on Instagram, photos of things, there's a lot that I could say, but that's my own.
In what sense do you mean it had changed? Just that the you know, you didn't have any, you didn't know anybody there, or demographically,
not demographically. The town is still largely, it's rural Scotland, so it's still largely shielded from that stuff. But it had changed in the sense that some buildings have gone, new buildings have appeared, shops, in the Lithgow High Street, the shops are, most of them are new. I didn't recognize them. So much has gone. A huge building that was in the middle of the high street has been demolished, an old Victorian thing. I can't believe they did that, but they did. Mm. And then a relative of mine has fallen ill with a serious long-term degenerative illness. And so, things change, you know. Yeah. That's what I mean when I say things change.
Sure.
My
experiences have always been twofold with nostalgia. I remember when I first went back to my home village after having lived away for a certain period of time, I almost cried when I got back there. And it was so, you know, I walked around all the places I'd been, and it was really kind of upsetting. Well, not upsetting. It was nice. It was really beautiful in a very sad kind of way. But I think there's always a second emotion which is coupled with that, which is, once you've been back to your home village for a few weeks and then it's time to head off again, you feel like really refreshed. And as you say, you kind of want to get on with your life and go somewhere and build a future. I think it's inevitable in our sort of life cycles that ultimately the past dies. And I guess, you know, family members die, and then that sort of kind of inspires you to seek out something new and indeed to procreate. I mean, procreation ultimately, I think, happens a lot when people lose their older family members and they realize it's not going to go on forever. And so they want to, they want to give the gift of life to other people in the same way that they had the gift of life given to them by their, you know, by their parents.
Well, exactly, because yeah, you only exist and all of those memories only exist because your parents procreated. Mm-hmm. So it's I wouldn't say that it's a duty necessarily, but it is something that is kind of self, it's obvious. It's like you should do that so that that thing can happen again, so that mm-hmm. a new childhood can happen. Yes. And new memories can be formed and new experiences can be had by a new creature, a new person. But yeah, I think part of the problem here is that all of this was just obvious to people in the past. It was just because death was much more of an ever-present thing than it is now.
Yeah.
And comfort was much more elusive, much more transient. And you were probably more aware of frailty and of your own part in being able to stave off death and so on by creating new life. And I think that we've just we've been spoiled, we've been pampered in a sense, because we were raised, and I try to think, like, did my parents do something? That did they go wrong somewhere? I don't think they did. I think it was the culture. I think it was the society that I grew up in that made me think, you'll be safe. Things will be taken care of. There is permanence, and things last forever in some strange sense, because you can always rewind the video, but in real life you can't. So I think that we were raised to be soft, basically, and not by our parents, but by the culture. And then you eventually arrive in adulthood, and then you start getting older quite quickly. And I remember even in my 20s looking at, I would meet people from my childhood and think, fuck, you're going bald. You know, you look older, and then you realize it's happening to yourself. And it's scary. But again, that would not have been a surprise or some kind of mystery to our ancestors. It's like, of course you're in your late 20s now. You're not a kid.
Yeah.
But I think that with us, there's this temptation, and very much encouraged by the culture, to extend adolescence, to extend childhood effectively into your 20s, your 30s, and your 40s. And it is definitely a very... unhealthy thing, but also a very difficult thing to get out of, you know, once you're in that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think our generation were subtly and very, very subtly encouraged to go in this childless direction, where we didn't think that family or children or this kind of thing, the typical traditions, are that important. And when I say subtly, that's a very important point. Not all the propaganda that has been, you know, chucked at us has been laid on with a trowel. There is a lot of subtle propaganda in all of this, which sort of leads us in this direction. But what I wanted to say was, I think one of the big things that the elites have done is they've inculcated this idea that any men who like children are somehow, you know, pedophiles or something like this. And I personally think that children are just one of the biggest joys that you can find in life. I think they're absolutely hilarious. And I think if you don't, in most social settings, it's very nice to be surrounded by children. I mean adults as well. But for example, I went to a wedding where children were banned, and I was just horrified. I think that's like taking the soul out of, you know, out of the wedding. It was really annoying. And I remember back to when one of my ex-girlfriends and I were courting. And one of the most beautiful things about our courtship was that she had two younger cousins, or two younger, I guess they were nieces. And they would always want to play with us. And so together, as a sort of like mini family, we would sort of, you know, play games and, you know, just stupid things like play badminton or chasey or various things. But it's, kids give you that kind of inspiration. They give you that sort of tonic. And they're very, I really think that kind of the way that we have sort of been conditioned to think that anyone who likes children, like especially men, if they like children, there's something a bit wrong with them. I think that's what one of the sad things in our society.
Oh, for sure. But I mean, that's a very complicated issue, because it is true that in the past things happen. We know about, not just Jimmy Savile, but there was some kind of culture that allowed men to do this stuff. Mm. I mean, that does seem to be the case. But at the same time, the paranoia that results from knowing that spoils things. I don't know what the answer is. I think that it's something we're going to have to work out socially. But I do think you're right that this feeling of, I mean, it's something I've been aware of ever since I was a teenager. You think, okay, I'm now someone who can be suspected of things. You're aware of that.
Yeah.
But it's part of society. It's part of the culture that we have, that we're all aware of that. But I think you are right that children do bring something to situations. And also another thing I saw was that someone said children keep, like, if to be a parent keeps you young, which I think is a very interesting reflection, because there are so many of these awful toxic messages in the culture that you can't help but absorb it in some level, where you think, well, you know, if I have kids, if I become a parent, then I'll lose my freedom. But also it will age me. It will tire me out. I'll be exhausted all the time. But this person was saying, no, actually, they keep you young almost against your will. They force you to be energetic in order to keep up with them, which I think is really sweet. I mean, it's I have to say, it's nice to see this side of you, Thomas, because on YouTube, you're so, in your own videos, you're so angry. But I think a lot of people are probably surprised to hear that you've got this soft side.
I can guarantee you I'm still a secret psychopath underneath who's bent on getting vengeance. So I guess it's my niece and my nephew in some way. I to see them when my niece and my nephew are in the house and they're with my parents, it actually changes your relationship with your parents, because I always call my mother Nana or Nanan, and I always call my father granddad when the kids are around. It's like it sounds so stupid, it's such a little thing, but me calling my mother Nanan is in the presence of their grandchildren is just such a tonic. I can't explain it, and I just when they come in the house, when they come home from school, I mean I'm an absolute bear and I don't like being disturbed in my work, but I will run down and go and speak to them and have a stupid little game of something. So that's what I wanted to say on that. But going back to what you were saying earlier about the accusations which are thrown at men, men who like children, all of this, I totally know what you mean. I was terrified of children from the age of about 16 till 25, because I was very shy and nervous, especially when I was young. And I was awkward, and I always felt a bit intimidated by little children because I didn't know what to say to them. And you always worried that someone was going to start gossiping something stupid about you. So it actually took working as an English language teacher to sort of get me over this. And then, of course, I had nieces and nephews. So, yeah.
Someone told me that the thing to do with kids is just talk to them normally.
Mm.
I don't know if they don't sort of act as if you're talking to someone who's mentally subnormal.
I agree with that largely. Yes. Yes. Kids are they're often more precocious than you think.
Right. Right. Okay. Yeah. Someone else is disagreeing with us, saying children suck the life force out of you. That's a contrary, point of view there.
I would say on that, let's just put a disclaimer here. I don't have kids, and if I did, I probably would be stressed as hell. So kids, I think for all that is important to stress to people, that you know, kids are very central to your life, and if you miss out on having them, you're missing out on something big. I think it is also important to stress that it's 24/7. You won't ever stop worrying about your kids until you die. There's all sorts of stress, and yes, there's a lot of fun along the way, but clearly I want to put that disclaimer out there, because I know just from seeing the parents that I do know that it's all very, very stressful.
Yeah. So someone's asking in the entropy, and you can post questions on entropy. Please do. It's always fun to answer questions. You've got this Yankee all nostalgic for the 90s and Red Dwarf. favorite episodes, Meltdown, Stasis Leak, Quarantine. Well, let's briefly go into this. Quarantine is obviously a classic episode. It's fantastic. It's hilarious. But really, that's from the fifth season, and every episode in that season is just a masterpiece in its own way. It's just six brilliant pieces of television. So everything from the fifth season. But I would also say Marooned from the third season is just brilliant. It's brilliant. I don't know what other words to use to describe it. It's a fantastic half hour. So Marooned. If I had to choose one from the fifth season, it would be as the best. It would be Back to Reality, which is the standard sort of most people would agree with that, I think. So those are my favorite episodes. What else? I'm trying to think. I mean, there are so many, like Justice, DNA. The Last Day with Crichton's replacement. These are all fantastic as well. I do have fondness for the first two seasons. You mentioned Stasis Leak. But I prefer the middle era, the seasons 3, 4, and 5. That's my favourite. Do you know Red Dwarf very well, Thomas?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And I was a big fan, and my siblings were big fans. You're right, Marooned was a very clever episode, which at first I was too young to understand, and then you know, as I grew up, I realized it was a very good episode. I can't think off the top of my head of my favorite, so I won't say. But I was going to pick up a big bone of contention with you, which might result in the end of our friendship. But you once said that season 6 was a bad one. Now, listen,
hold on. I didn't say it was bad. I said it was the start of the decline.
I'm going to have to disagree with you on that, because the decline came in season 7, which was terrible, I think. But I think that season 6, in its own way, was a very good season. I know purists don't like it for some reason, but I think it was actually quite punchy and pacey. I'm sorry to say that.
That's all right. I mean, there are some hilarious, like Legion is very funny, and Gunmen of the Apocalypse is often cited as the best episode ever. And it's not dreadful. I just think you can see the start of the decline. Mm. For example, and I don't want to ruin it for you by telling you why I think it's the start of the decline. it's always annoying when people do that. So it's fine if we agree to disagree on this. I don't care. It's fine. It's more important that we stay friends. And I don't want to ruin something that you like. So I'm not going to tell you, well, here are all the reasons why you shouldn't like it. That's just crap. But I will agree with you, though, that it's kind of unique, that season, because they've just lost Red Dwarf. They're on Starbug. Mm. 200 years have passed. They've been in stasis looking for Red Dwarf. It's certainly a brave move of the writers to do that at the time. And it is quite unique. It's the last time that you have the four mm-hmm. men. Mm-hmm. Season 7, you get Kachansky, who was a really sexy, hot actress, but I just didn't think it worked. It was just wrong. You don't need a woman in that atmosphere. It's just wrong. Just wrong. Mm-hmm. Didn't work.
We were based misogynists back in the day.
Yeah. Well, what year was that? I think that was 97. I think. So yeah, season 6 was 93, and then there was the gap, and then they did the one on the season 8, which was just abysmal, just absolute shite. Oh. We can agree on that. And then the comeback, I actually thought that Back to Earth, I think that was 2010, I actually thought that was quite good. Did you see that? It didn't have the audience laugh track.
Right. Did that improve it?
I tend to prefer sitcoms to have the laugh track. I think that that's part of the atmosphere for me. But actually, in that case, I thought it worked quite well. I thought it was a clever sci-fi idea at the heart of it. It was the despair squid from Back to Reality, season 5. And they worked with it in a very clever way. And I thought it was quite a good thing. The stuff subsequent to that, seasons 11 and 12, and is it 13 now? Whatever. I don't think it's very good, honestly, the new stuff. I think it's not in the same league as the original, 80s and 90s stuff. So yeah. I wish them well, and but I think one of the writers left, one of the two writers left after season 6, and I just don't think it ever recovered from that, basically.
No.
So what I would like is for them to do one thing to see it off, to end it, to get the other writer back in, Rob Grant, and do a season or a special that ends it with them getting back to Earth, maybe traveling back in time 3 million years to where they left off. And I would also like them to revisit sets like the original drive room from the first season, the science room from the second season, and the computer room from the middle era. I would like them to do one last thing that ties all this stuff together, that brings these old sets back one last time, and then they get back to Earth. You know, that would be the way to end it, but it would have to have the original two writers, I think. That would be the perfect way to end it. And I think they should do it pretty soon, because, you know, the actors are, you know, it's easy to forget that the actors, when they started, were all in their 20s. You know, these were young guys. They're now in their, 50s, 60s. So they should do it pretty soon, I think.
Yes. There's a funny, at the end of episode 6, in series 6, Kat and Rimmer are horrified by what they've become, which is kind of middle-aged and, you know, old, basically. And yeah, if you watch it now, that's essentially what they have become. You know, if you watch the current series, they are very middle-aged and old. So it's sort of a bit of a parody of itself in that sense. But I've just seen glimpses of the current series.
It's honestly not... I hate to say this, but I just don't really think it's even worth watching.
Mm.
It just feels like imitators trying to do Red Dwarf rather than... it's just not funny. It's just not good. And the main thing is it just doesn't have the... I think that the writer who left, Rob Grant, I think he was the one who brought the more highbrow elements to it. Because, and also quality control. Because I think that it's just not as funny, it's not as well written, but it's also just, it does not have the philosophical elements, the moral stuff in it, which I used to love. None of that is there. And also, just to give an example that really illustrates the difference, in Marooned from season 3, which is one of probably my favorite episode, Rimmer is going on and on about what a book is. And it's the voice of freedom. It's the essence of civilization. And so it's the one person giving their, and he talks about Shakespeare and so on. And then in season, one of these new seasons, I think 11, he says that he completely changed. He's got a completely different attitude to all of this, just for the sake of cheap laughs. And he's saying that Shakespeare was just a guy who came up with some cool phrases. And that's how shallow it's become. And I couldn't believe that the writer was changing this character so drastically, but he did. And there you go. That's a sort of indication of how not only the characters have changed, but the whole attitude of the program has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. And you see this kind of thing in Star Trek as well. Not that I watch any of the new versions of Star Trek, but they basically, as you know, to pick a phrase which I've seen on YouTube, they piss all over the canon. They sort of they take things which were important for the characters at one point, and now they urinate on it, they desecrate it. But you're absolutely right about Red Dwarf having it had a real heart and a soul. It was a lot deeper than the sort of the comedy that it superficially was. There was always a much deeper aspect to it. I think one of the best, I mean, some of the best episodes I think were probably in season two. I'm trying to think which ones. The one where Rimmer's dad dies, for example, is quite. He gets a letter from Earth telling him that his father.
Oh yes,
died. I don't remember the name of the episode.
Yes, I think it was Better Than Life.
That's right.
That happened, yeah. I think. And then the other really good one from season two is Thanks for the Memory, where Rimmer is given is the implant memories of a relationship that he never had because he's never had a relationship. So yeah. They give him this, but then he realizes he finds out what they've done. So he has the joy of having known love and being in love, but then he finds out that it was a fiction, that it never happened to him, and it's just. I mean, it's actually very profound, and it's very well, just very well done. It's just fantastic. Yeah. It's heartbreaking, actually.
Yeah, indeed. And I think the writers were very good at exploiting the possibilities of sci-fi in order to sort of explore more profound aspects of the human condition, which sounds a bit like Claptrap. But
it's not, though. It's not exactly that. And that's why I loved it so much. It's like the perfect thing for someone like me and perhaps someone like you, because it's science fiction that elucidates aspects of human nature and the nature of existence. It's exactly, well, I'm not going to say it's exactly what sci-fi should do, but it's definitely a very noble use of sci-fi.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. I mean, all this, you know, bad sci-fi, I think, is when they just have, like, you know, fights between alien ships in space. Well, that can be exciting in its own way. But I think, you know, like you say, elucidating the sort of plight of the human condition is the best use of sci-fi.
Yeah. And season five, you've got six examples of that, where a sci-fi concept is used to do this in like very clever and quite original ways.
What are the five episodes in series five?
Six episodes. You've got Hollow Ship, The Inquisitor, Terraform, Quarantine, Demons and Angels, and Back to Reality. Mm-hmm. Hollow Ship is one that some people don't like it, but I think it's fantastic because for the first time and perhaps only time, Rimmer becomes a hero because he sacrifices everything that he ever wanted. He gets everything that he ever wanted and he sacrifices it for a woman that he loves and goes back to Red Dwarf. And it's just so, I mean, you could say that's cucky, I don't know. But on the other hand, it's extremely moving because... You know, if he doesn't do this, then she will cease to exist. So so he sacrifices it so that she can continue to exist. And I think it's just fantastic. And I guess very moving. So that's a lovely episode. I really like it. So that's that. And then the Inquisitor is... I don't want to go through all the other five, but they're just really good. I definitely reckon. I'd say that season five of Red Dwarf is basically the best of television. I think that's not an exaggeration. I think it's as good as television gets. It's fantastic. It works as a comedy. It works as a drama. It works as science fiction. And it works as a sort of on a philosophical level as well. It's just you get so much out of Red Dwarf at its best. You can't believe that. It just two guys did this. And again, if you compare it with American series, they've got like 20, 30 writers on them. It's incredible. There are some people saying about Star Trek that, you know, it's as you were saying, it's now shitting all over its own legacy. Same thing with Star Wars as well, of course. But it's unbelievable how they have these precious things that have been created. And it's same with Doctor Who. I mean, And it looks like they're doing it with James Bond as well now. I mean, I just, it's incredible that what we're seeing. I mean, you know, we can talk about the statues being desecrated with BLM, but the same thing is going on in our fiction. And I'm not going to say that Star Trek is on a par with Shakespeare, but they're doing the same thing to Shakespeare anyway. It doesn't matter. All aspects of our culture are being desecrated systematically and maliciously. I don't know what to say about that. I think it's just, it's fucking depressing.
It is essentially cultural vandalism. I mean, you're right. I mean, I don't want to, we shouldn't make out that things like Star Trek are like, totally on the same par as Shakespeare, but they are important cultural phenomenons. I mean, I think sci-fi is quite an original genre, really, which has only come about quite recently. It's not worth, if you look at the history of sort of theater and literature, it is quite a novelty science fiction. It shouldn't be something that we sniff at. I think it is quite a sort of a unique achievement of our society that we came to these sort of science fiction ideas. So I agree in some ways. It is exactly like the statues. It's cultural vandalism.
Yeah, I mean, people say that the very first work of science fiction was Frankenstein in 1818. So I think that's, I'm willing to believe that there was nothing that preceded that fitted the genre. I'm trying to think what else in the 19th century would have fitted that genre. I'm not sure. I'm not well read enough to know. I dare say that there were other things, but the next thing that I can think of is H.G. Wells.
Yes.
So, yeah, but then obviously the 20th century is just absolutely full of science fiction, unless it's British TV, because then British TV has always had this aversion to sci-fi, which I think is a real shame, actually.
Is that correct?
Sorry?
Is that true? I thought they did Doctor Who and...
Yeah, but they do very few, though. I mean, if you compare it with other genres, there aren't many. I mean, how many science fiction TV series can you think of? The Doctor Who, Blake 7, Red Dwarf, not much else, I don't think, which is surprising because these programs do tend to be ones that have quite a lot of longevity about them. We've been talking for 47 minutes and we haven't, I mean, I don't know what to do. What do you want to do? Do you want to now segue into very high, very, or do you want to keep talking about nostalgia? I don't mind. It's up to you.
I personally, Woz, I would prefer to talk about some of this stuff that I talk about on my channel because I think it could be quite important. And If it's all right, I'd like to talk about that now and then.
Okay, this is going to be a segue more dramatic than that between Red Dwarf season 5 and season 6. Right? So just be prepared. So, all right. I mean season 6 and 7, of course. Don't worry. All right. So you take it away, Thomas. And this is going to be a dramatic change in tone, so be prepared. But yeah, the stuff you talk about on your channel, you've talked about a lot of things over the... I mean, I've been watching your channel since, I think, 2017. I think that was the first time I had you on Millennial was 2017. I'm not sure now. And, you go for it. You describe your channel to people, and then we can get into the nub of 2020 and 2021.
Yes. Well, I suppose people would call me a conspiracy theorist. I don't particularly like that label, but I'll sort of accept it. What I want to tell people about is that ultimately, if my calculations are correct, we are on the verge of the biggest revolution in history. We're on the verge of the biggest world revolution in history. And whatever you thought about 2020 being incredible, 2021 is going to absolutely blow it into the stratosphere because For everything I know, I have to believe that it's going to be an absolutely incredible year. And I want to say to anyone who is perhaps black-pilled or depressed or miserable or sick and tired, I want to say to them, if you've come this far, you don't have much longer to continue before we get to a stage where a great sense of camaraderie will develop amongst the people and the citizens. And so for anyone who has lost hope at this point, I really urge them just to keep in touch, because in 2021, however dangerous it might be about to get, it will also get very, very exciting, and there should be a good sense of camaraderie. So if you're eating well, yeah, let me continue, because I've got plenty to say. So I want to tell you about the Illuminati plan, the three-part Illuminati plan to take over the world. And I'm going to use the word Illuminati, but I can be more specific than that. I just don't want to be, because I don't want to get your channel into trouble. So maybe there are some people, some of my people in the chat, who can elucidate for the others who I really mean when I say the Illuminati. But if I can tell you my three-part plan of how the Illuminati tend to take over the world, and that is this. The first thing that they want to do is to put a central bank in every nation on the planet. The second thing that they want to do is to set up the apparatus for a global government. And the third part of this plan, once parts one and part two are accomplished, is to crash the Western governments and replace them by a global government. And if we look at where we are with this plan, I firmly believe that parts one and parts two are done. So we have central banks in every nation on the planet. We also have the United Nations and the European Union fully set up. They are a global government in waiting. And therefore, what I think the stage of the plan that we're now at is a third stage, where the plan is to crash the Western governments and to replace them by a global government.
Right. So the obvious question then is, how are they going to crash all of these governments?
Yes. Well, indeed. So there, what the Illuminati are doing.
Sorry, I should just say, before I ask you that, I should have said, I do agree with you about world government. It does seem like these institutions have been created and nurtured over the decades, developed. Their links to national governments have been forged. And so that is... And, you know, they're quite open about that. And globalists, Antifa, are quite unashamed. I mean, I'm guessing that they will object to it anyway, just because you and I are saying it. But nonetheless, they say it themselves, and then it's okay. So yes. I think, you know, if they don't want outright globalism, they definitely do want an era of cooperation and partnership and so on. So, so that is completely plausible to me, what you've said, stages one and two. So then the third stage is crash the national governments. So how are they going to do that?
Yes, indeed. Well, what the Illuminati are doing is they are fomenting dissent in the Western nations so that people rebel against their governments, so that people rebel against the current social order and basically demand a new world order. Now, there are various different ways in which they are fomenting dissent in the Western nations. And many of these we have seen in the last 20 years, and all of them are hot button discussion topics in the distant right. But if I want to pick out four specific issues where they are really going to push this strategy of getting the people to rebel against their governments. And these four different issues are these. The first one is the scamdemic. The second one is BLM. The third issue is I can't talk about this, but it is the event which occurred in America at the end of this year. And the fourth issue is 9/11. So if I can come to these four issues, the first one, the scamdemic, people will say, what is the point? What is the point of the scamdemic? What are they trying to do? I will say that what the Illuminati are trying to do is that they are trying to, what they want us to do is they want us to work out that the scamdemic is a scam. That's the point of it. The point of the scamdemic is to work out that it is a scam. And if you think about, you know, where we're headed, I envisage that in 2021, people are going to get very, very angry about the scamdemic. There's going to be an economic downturn. They're going to lose their jobs. They're probably going to be queuing up at the shops to get food. they're going to get sick of the lockdown. They're going to work out that the virus isn't particularly deadly. And then on top of that, they're going to be scared that they might have to take some sort of mandatory vaccine. And so for all of these reasons, what I expect to see in 2021 is people rebelling against their government in regard to the scamdemic. Now, the second prong, the second issue is the BLM stuff. We have seen this year that Black Lives Matter has been absolutely mainstreamed. Premiership footballers have actually spent more minutes kneeling to a criminal in America than they have done for every single person who died in World War II and World War I.
I thought you were going to say these footballers have spent more time kneeling to a criminal than they've spent playing football. But not quite.
Not quite. But I think the World War II and World War I comparison is very important because they only do a minute silence for the veterans of these wars once a year. Whereas for BLM, and particularly for the guy who was killed, they've done a minute every game. I mean, this is incredible. So this has been pushed by the powers that be, whilst at the same time we saw massive acts of rioting and looting and violence and vandalism from BLM and indeed Antifa. So what, again, I suggest is that in 2021, this will be ramped up again and it will come back as a theme. And when it does, the people, again, will start asking, why are our government and the powers that be selling us out to what is essentially a criminal organization? And the third prong is the US, the next top president competition, which happened in, you know, about a month ago. Again, I can't really say much about this, but I think what will happen in 2021 is that we will get more and more evidence coming out that this was not fair. And when people find out that it's not fair, they're going to be very, very angry with the government. And then on top of that, there's the fourth issue, which is 9/11. It's the 20th anniversary of 9/11. And I really do absolutely expect that it is the plan of the Illuminati to reveal that 9/11 was an inside job. And again, this will be this will be the coup de grace in terms of getting the people to rebel against their government.
Right. Okay. And then they will, but then it's not for anyone's benefit except their own. So, because the upshot will be that national governments are discredited.
Yes, exactly. The whole business, really, of what I believe the elites or the Illuminati have been trying to do, especially in the last 20 years, is to get people ultimately to hate their governments so that they are then used sort of ultimately to crash those governments and basically to rebel against the current social order and to demand a new world order. And so in that sense, to make it clear, all conspiracy theorists and all dissident writers are actually secretly working for the Illuminati and helping them to get a global government.
Right. So someone says, so Biden is the fall guy then?
Just remind me what fall guy means exactly, Woz.
Well, that means the guy who gets blamed for something that has been organized by other people, but they pin the blame on someone else. So they'd be putting Biden in to be the guy who oversees this collapse.
Yes, precisely. They want, what the Illuminati want is to put in a terrible government in the US. That's what they want. So they want to put in such a bad government that the people rebel against it.
Right. And that does sound quite reliable with Biden and Kamala Harris.
Yes. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if, I don't think anyone would be surprised if Kamala Harris takes over. And if she does, you've then gone full SJW because you've got, you know, she's a woman with certain characteristics. So, you know, that's the kind of SJW dream. And I think the Illuminati know this will really irritate people, and it will be something that they react against.
And so the upshot will be that people are then directed towards international organizations that are less corrupt than the national governments.
Well, listen, I don't think, I mean, at the present moment in time, I've got nothing good to say about the United Nations or the European Union. And to be frank, I don't have anything good to say about the Illuminati. But what I believe will happen is is that once we've gone through this period of crashing the Western governments, then the Illuminati will come to power. They will announce themselves. And when they do, they will basically reverse every single social trend that we've seen and present themselves as the good guys. So in all of this, what you really have is a giant game of problem, reaction, solution. The problem is all the stuff that we in distant circles have been talking about. The reaction is us, the people, reacting against all this stuff. And the solution will be the New World Order. And it's not, you won't find another conspiracy theorist who will promote the New World Order and say it's a good thing. I will go out on a limb and say that the New World Order will be a good thing. It will be the answer to all our prayers, essentially.
So you're a New World Order supremacist.
Well, exactly. I am a proud promoter of the New World Order. I know it's a very it's not an opinion you will hear, but I came to this conclusion via various sources. First of all, Albert Pike's letter, which has been correct on everything. Second of all, the proto calls, which I think has also been correct on everything, and which talks about a benevolent world government at the end. And then the other thing I'll just say is it's just my intuition. I don't think the Illuminati can be so stupid that they want us to believe that a man in a dress is really a woman. What the trans stuff for me, if we take the trans propaganda, the trans agenda propaganda, and we look at that and dissect it under the microscope, I have to believe that what they're really trying to do is to provocate us, to get a reaction out of us, and to say, no, we don't want that. We want to go back to normality. And I believe that that's true of every other issue that you will see, whether it's from, you know, wars in the Middle East or immigration, acid attacks, grooming gangs, the Kalergi plan. I think they're trying to provoke us into reaction. And when we demand something better, they will come along and essentially give it to us.
So it's creating the problem so that they can present the solution. Another way would, I mean, there is another theory about anarcho-tyranny, which is that it's sort of sequential. It's not in parallel. You're supposed to have the anarchy so that you can then implement the tyranny.
Mm-hmm. I guess 9/11 would be a very good example of that, where you create that sort of terror, and that, you know, they, on the back of 9/11, they were able to introduce the Patriot Act and so take away a lot of people's rights. What I personally believe is that I think that the Illuminati are so powerful, they're so unbelievably powerful, that they have no need really to run a government which sort of enslaves us, so to speak. They can afford to be nice to us. They really can, and I think they will be.
Benign rulers, benign dictators.
Yes, benevolent dictators, precisely, yeah.
I know that, you know, there are people who think that that is the ideal form of government, benevolent dictator. I think Stanley Kubrick used the word benign dictators. That was the one that came to my mind. Benevolent, because it gets away from the mess of democracy. That's the thing, you know. I mean, I'm not going to say that I'm anti-democracy, but I've always had, I mean, I did a video in 2014, Doubts About Democracy. I think everyone, but at this point, I think it seems like both sides have severe problems with democracy. Like, both sides hate that they have to tolerate the other side being taken seriously.
Yes.
I mean, and the left believe that the right are taken seriously, you know, but then again, maybe it's foolish of us to think that the left are taken seriously. we think they are, but maybe they're not. Maybe they are just being used as, you know, sort of blind shock troops.
Yeah. Oh, the left are useful idiots. I have no doubt about that. I genuinely believe that the left are useful idiots. I will go out on a limb and say that I loathe democracy and I don't want to see it anymore. I think in reality, every single system, every single political system which has ever really existed has always been a dictatorship. It's just, is it a secret dictatorship or is it an open dictatorship? So I believe that the only form of government that you can have is dictatorship. And then the question is it a malevolent dictatorship or is it a benevolent dictatorship? And well, it's a very silly thing to say, but ultimately you've just got to hope that you get a benevolent dictatorship.
I do think that a lot of people would say that democracy itself is just the dictatorship of the media or the press or something. I've forgotten what it, the rule of the media. Yeah. That does seem to be, and definitely this year, what would you say about that this year?
Absolutely. I mean, it's really to any, I think it has to be apparent in 2020, given all that we've seen, that people, it's not natural within them to have their own opinion. They're clearly followers who have to be led. And, you know, just like the sheep running over the cliff, if they're misled, they can be led into, you know, misled into such a catastrophe. And that's what we're seeing here. I half believe that what the Illuminati want to do is to teach us a lesson about the importance of having good leaders and not having democracy, not having egalitarianism where everybody has an equal opinion. So I think a lot of what they're doing is they're creating lessons which afterwards they will point to and say, look, you tried democracy and it didn't work. Or look, you tried egalitarianism and then that led to all these, you know, idiots with opinions on Twitter, all these leftist liberals with stupid opinions. You know, look where that got you. Who wants that? And, you know, people like us will say, we don't want any more of that. And that will ultimately bind us to a benevolent dictatorship in the future. So
that is a very dramatic diagnosis, because what you're saying essentially is that this entire thing has been a lesson in human limitation. It's the opposite of what it looks like, because what we're told is that everyone has potential and everyone's voice is valuable and everyone is amazing and beautiful and all this, but actually the lesson at the end of it is really absolutely not. And we've proven it to you, but we've helped you to prove to yourselves that you need leadership.
Absolutely. I think one of the things which is important to understand, and you can read this if you read the POZ, and someone in the chat, one of my people in the chat, can tell everyone else what the POZ is. But if you read the POZ, you understand that notions like progressivism and egalitarianism and all this kind of equal rights stuff, all of this was pushed simply to basically poison the hierarchy so that any intelligent men who might have been rivals to the Illuminati were basically drowned out, had their voices drowned out by the mob. So basically all the pushing of...
Look what happened to Gaddafi.
Yes. Well, ultimately, this goes back to the central banking stuff I was talking about earlier. I genuinely think Gaddafi was the last person to challenge the Illuminati on the banking stuff. I think he refused to have a central bank, and so they whipped up a mob against him, and basically, it was like the French Revolution. They whipped up a mob of his own people, got them into a hysteria, and sort of made them attack and bring down Gaddafi. But really, the ultimate game was between Gaddafi and the Illuminati, and you know, Gaddafi was refusing to have a central bank, I think. So.
Yes, I can believe that. Yeah, sorry, go on.
Yes, so I think what in it, the whole business of egalitarianism and progressivism has been done simply to create mobs of people who, at the will of the Illuminati, the Illuminati can say, right, you mob, we want you to go and get this intelligent guy or this benevolent, it could be a benevolent king, it could be an intelligent aristocrat. Go and get him because he thinks he's better than you. He's got more money than you. And the reason he's got that is because of privilege and blah, 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 blah. But in reality, all that's happening is that the Illuminati have been taking out all of their enemies, you know, across the last, I would say, 250 years, taking them out by using a mob of, well, what is essentially a cultural Marxist progressive mob. So, but the point that I want to come to is that now, at this stage in history, the Illuminati have finished. They've killed off all their opposition. And so now they want to raise themselves up as kings. And so what they want to do now is to teach humanity the lesson that these progressive mobs are really evil. Egalitarianism is evil. Hierarchy is good. And when we all say, yes, hierarchy is good, they can then present themselves as kings. And we will accept that. We will accept a king because we will know the horrors of democracy and egalitarianism and liberalism and progressivism.
Yes. What would you say that this is an optimistic view? Like this is actually a sort of tonic for people's pessimism about and despair, actually, about the way things are going.
Absolutely. I don't get, not many people agree with me that the New World Order will be good, but it is, if you're in despair, then I think it's a huge white pill, because, you know, the white pill is that all this stuff that we've been put through, all this insanity that we see on a daily basis, all of this is simply being done to get to an ultimate solution, which will ultimately be very nice. So I want to, I won't get much thanks for this, but I want to tell people the New World Order will be good. And I think we're only 21 months away from it. The Illuminati will come in, they will solve all the problems that we've been talking about. They will also, I believe, take care of a certain democracy in the Middle East. And so in that sense, I want people to understand that they are really going to clean up their house in a very massive way. And so I think people should be excited about that. But the other thing, which I really think people should be excited about, is this. Because you and I and all the people on the distant right, we might think that the problem that we have is that we have no institutionalized power. Now, the fact that we don't have any institutionalized power is very important. But I would say it's possibly just 10% of the problem. The major part of the problem is that we are gaslit on a daily basis into being convinced that we're a fringe group of people, and that's what we believe is crazy or stupid or not, you know, doesn't match reality. What I want to say to people is that I expect in the year of 2021, there will be mass swathes of the population that will become red-pilled. And when that happens, it will not matter that we don't have an inch of institutionalized power. It will not matter that the powers that be might be very dangerous and against us. The important point is that when mass swathes of the population get red-pilled, there will be a huge sense of camaraderie, and we will really feel as if we're all in this together. And so you will be able to go to your local village and talk to people about these issues, and there might be 100 people, you know, in your local village who you can talk to, and suddenly you won't feel alone. And even though we might still be living under a malevolent elite, the fact that there will be this kind of bond between the citizenry, I think this will really give people a surge of life. And that's why I say, if you've come this far, you just need to survive into 2021. And, you know, great things are around the corner. But let me just add, people need to be prepared. I advise that you stock up on basically about a year's supply of essential foods. I also suggest if you're in America, you need ammunition. And, you know, you will have to forge ties with your local community. Things are going to get very dangerous. There will be, you know, the police are not on your side. The government will not be on your side. But ultimately, I expect that the citizenry will be.
So what kind of time frame? I mean, you've said 2021. Do you think, can you give any more detail than that?
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, I'm not impatient. I'm just curious.
Sure, of course. Well, it's a good question. And what I want to say on the time frame is that I could come on here and cuck out and say all of this is going to happen in the next 5 or 10 years. But according to my calculations, all of this, everything that I'm talking about, has to happen in a 21-month frame. So what I believe, we basically have to get through three things by September of 2022. The first thing that we have to get through is the rebellion against the government. So people have to sort of get angry with their government and then start rebelling against their government. The second phase we have to go through is that the governments essentially will fall, and there will be anarchy. There will be rioting and looting on the street. There will be food shortages, this kind of thing. That's the second phase. The third phase is that the Illuminati have to announce themselves as kings of the world. So that's three phases that we have to get through by September 2022, which means that if I'm right, and lots of people will doubt that I am, but if I am right, then my God, the level of acceleration that is coming this year, the level of acceleration that will happen in 2021 will be off this planet. It will be stratospheric. I really can't stress this enough, but I do expect that. I do expect that. And I expect all the different narratives that they've set up. If you imagine all the different narratives that they set up, or just imagine them as like a row of 100 balloons, you know, from whether it's Black Lives Matter, feminism, transgender toilets, whether it's 9/11, whether it's the Kalogi plan, whether it's immigration, Islam, all lined up like 100 balloons. In the next 21 months, someone is going to go along all of those narratives, all of those narrative balloons, and just start popping them all. And so the narrative is just going to collapse. It's going to be exactly like it was in the end times of the Soviet Union.
Right. That's an interesting parallel. What would you say is the evidence for this? I mean, it's a very clear and elegant theory. What evidence is there to support it?
Basically, I will come back to four major things. The first one is Albert Pike's letter, which I think I'm entitled to believe is true. The second thing is the POZ, which, again, I think I'm entitled to say it's true. So both of these things, which are considered to be forgeries, the POZ and Albert Pike letter, basically, if you look into them, they are in tandem with what I am saying. So that's those two things. Now, the third thing is 9/11, which I've studied in depth. And by the end of the time I'd come to studying 9/11, I came to the conclusion that whoever did this, they wanted you to find out that it was, you know, that the official version is nonsense. They wanted you to find this out. It had to be true because it's just so insane. There's so many schoolboy errors all over 9/11 that was the only conclusion I could come to. And then I thought, well, hang on. If they do want a global government, they're going to need to get rid of the American government. And the revelation that 9/11 was an inside job would be the casus belli for that. So that's the third thing. And then the fourth thing is just my intuition. Anyone who has studied any of the things that we talk about in distant circles, let's take the Kalogi plan, right? Look at all the adverts with, it's a white woman with another, a blue man, right? So you have a white woman and a blue man in every advert. Where this is rubbish propaganda. This is rubbish propaganda from the Illuminati. And the Illuminati are past masters at propaganda. It's rubbish propaganda. Look again at BLM. You know, going on, they'll go on national television and say, oh, white people have got white privilege. The Kalogi plan could have easily been carried out if people had just been polite. If people had just, you know, if BLM, if all the SJWs had just kept the rhetoric down and said, oh, we're so grateful to come here, they could have this, you know, the Kalogi plan would have gone through easily, I think. But the fact is that you've got all these people, you've got all these SJWs, and all the propaganda is so laid on with a trowel, and it's so ridiculous that I have to believe the point is we're meant to react against it. We're meant to react against it and demand something better. So that's the evidence, I would say. And just one fifth and final thing, Henry Kissinger said that a certain democracy in the Middle East would be destroyed in September of 2022. So I think I'm working with that in my timetable.
Right. Okay. So then what, one final question about this, why do you think that the dictatorship that results from this will be benevolent? What's the evidence that it won't be malevolent?
Yes. Well, I think the evidence that it will be benevolent is partly based on intuition and mainly on the POZ. In the POZ, it talks about this. They talk about the temporary evil that they have to commit in order to get to the point of world government. But then they talk about all the different things they'll implement in the new world order. There will not be any taxes for the poor. There will not be outrageous capitalism. That will be drawn back. People will have a religion. You know, there will be a sense of community, fraternity. There will be a king. There will be hierarchy. There will be patriarchy. They talk about all these different measures that ultimately, I think would be benevolent. And they specifically say, we will be benevolent, and we can justify all the evil that we have committed by the fact that when we get into power, we will take the world forward and be very benevolent.
Was that a beep from your NWO handlers there? You're saying too much, Thomas. Go back to Red Dwarf.
I'm very sorry. I'm rude with watches like that.
That's all right.
But yeah, if I haven't bored you enough, I think that's my lecture over. So, yeah.
All right. Well, okay. I'll just take questions. Oh, by the way, just in case anyone's wondering about my T-shirt tonight, this is it's a Doctor Who T-shirt. It's from based on the Happiness Patrol story from 1988, and it's very fetching. It's very 80s, actually. Yeah, the Happiness Patrol. Very cool. Some people were asking. All right. So here we go.
Are you getting sponsored for your T-shirts, Wokes?
No. I just want to show them off because I really like them. Okay. So, all right. I'm trying to think which ones to go. Okay. If so many people and institutions are part of the Illuminati plan, then shouldn't we also assume that in all probability, Thomas Baden Reese is also part of it and is therefore not credible?
Well, I all I can say to that is I've been around for 6 years and I've got 6K subscribers. So if I think the Illuminati could have promoted me a bit more if I was part of their plan. That said, be suspicious of everybody.
All right. Okay. Okay. So someone else says, this guy uses all the words in a narrative that is unusually pro-New World Order. Frankly, so far just sounds like a pro certain narrative.
Oh, yes. Well, I don't, you mean a certain ethnic group?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, listen, my position on a certain ethnic group is I've got mixed feelings. I'm very angry about all the stuff that has gone on, all the malevolent stuff that has been done. On the other hand, when I look at the leaders of the Illuminati, I also recognize that they've been very intelligent and they've conducted themselves very well in terms of strategy. If you just look at all the things they've been able to do. And because I respect hierarchy and because I respect intelligence, I do accept that they are natural leaders of the world. The thing I will say, to go back to it, if you look on my channel, I believe that the Illuminati will take care of a certain state in the Middle East in all of this plan. So I saw the point that the person made is, I think he's 50% correct.
All right. Okay. So you do admire them. You admire the Illuminati.
Yes. I have to, because I think what they've done is very clever.
Right. Okay. All right. Okay, but that's not to say that you necessarily endorse it or love it or anything. It's just you're admiring its sophistication.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So here's something different. When I heard about the Biden thing, I thought, surely it's just a man like me uncomfortable around kids. Wow, was I wrong. That feeling when Uncle Joe took a deep sniff of that little girl's hair. What the fuck? Yes, exactly. I don't know what to say about that, but yes, it just looks freaky. Okay. Unification through the shared experience of chaos and out of that order. Is this the fulfillment of... Yes. Ryan, I'm not sure that I can ask that question. Sorry. All right. Leftists have a complete ideology. A shit ideology, but a full-formed ideology all the same. The modern right is a mishmash of lowbrow memes about work ethic. The right is objectively dumber than the left. The modern right is a mishmash of lowbrow memes about work ethic. I don't really understand that. Okay, so let's tackle the main point. The leftists have a complete ideology. It's shit, but it's a fully formed ideology. The modern right is a mishmash and objectively dumber. What would you What would you say to that?
I don't agree. I think the leftist ideology is just anything it wants to be in a given situation. I think it's a load of garbage. I think the reason that the left has gotten where it is, and the reason, for example, that it did the great march through the institutions, is that they were backed. They were backed by the Illuminati. That essentially, I see the left as nothing more than the useful idiots, the absolute useful idiots of the Illuminati.
Okay. And then another one, and this is a question that relates to aliens being in charge of things. An alien race who arrived on Earth a very long time ago and have woven themselves into the power structure on Earth. Proxima Centauri, yes, are those in charge of us really aliens? And are they, do you believe that there's any alien involvement in this?
I don't think so. I don't think so. I don't want to be closed-minded, but I would not say alien involvement.
Okay. All right. And so can Hegel's dream be fulfilled even with these people in charge of the world order? I'm not sure what he means by Hegel's dream.
I don't know either. Hegel was a German philosopher, of course, I think.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know what his dream was. So hold on a second. I'm sorry to...
It's okay.
...not be... I can't find that one. I'm sorry, Ryan. I'm going to have to let you down on that. Okay, he also asks, this is a question to me. Do you still have that forum where you talk about Doctor Who with other people on the right? Yes, it's on Telegram. I'll link to it now. If you hold on a second, it's not just for Doctor, it's also other science fiction and stuff. So if people want to join that, yes, you can do that. Here it is. It's just MWDW talk with underscores between the words. Okay. And it goes back to Red Dwarf. They actually tried an American version of Red Dwarf with Craig Bierko in the Lister role. It didn't work. Yeah, it was one of those things. I think it was 93 or 92, and it really wasn't good. I've seen it, and it's rubbish. It just doesn't transfer the humour. Best Doctor Who is Jon Pertwee. Best story, Planet of the Spiders, Death to the Two Legs. That's a phrase from Planet of the Spiders, and that's Jon Pertwee's story where he dies and regenerates into the Fourth Doctor. It's a good story, a very atmospheric story, actually. I like it for that. Okay, what is the guest's take on Atheism is Unstoppable? I like the guy. He is woke on certain issues, but he lacks any knowledge in the political sphere. So what is your take on Atheism is Unstoppable?
Oh, well, I have to say, first of all, Devin Tracy was very kind to give my channel a shout out. So for that, I will always be very grateful to him. I think on the comedy stuff, he's absolutely hilarious. And he's just one of those people. He gets so many different things. Like, he really understands a lot of the things. He's quite based, for example, on who commits, you know, the majority of crime in America. But then on other things, he's really off, you know, he's really off beam, I think. You know, he won't come across to a lot of the things that people on the distant right or the alt-right are saying. So Devin Tracy ultimately is a mystery to me. I don't quite know. But I think there's a lot of people out there like him that have these sort of cognitive dissonances, you know, when it comes to certain issues.
Yeah, it's often quite baffling. I agree with you. Someone else is saying that agreeing about Doctor Who, Jon Pertwee being the best Doctor. I do really like Jon Pertwee. I have a lot of affection for that era, the early 70s Doctor Who. Really nice. All right. Oh gosh. Should we donate sperm to spread our nationalist genes? I support this method of spreading nationalism. Do you? And I'm not sure if you're a nationalist as such, Thomas, but do you support the idea of donating sperm so as to spread your genes and thereby your ideas?
I think not. I think, first of all, on a moral level, it doesn't sit right with me. And second of all, I've heard a lot of stuff about sperm donation not really creating very healthy and fit children. What I will say to everyone is, hopefully, according to my plan, this time in 2 years' time, you will be respected as an important part of society again. You will be given the chance to do a job, to fulfill your potential. I mean, and when I talk about a job, I mean really a role in society, which will be good. The relationships between white men and white women will be repaired. And so all of society will be geared toward helping you to set up a family. So I think if you, I would not do the sperm donation stuff yet. I would hang on a bit.
Okay. You foresee an end to incelery.
Yes.
Okay. It would be funny if you did donate, like if that was a thing that you were doing, and you know, 10 years from now, there's a sort of a sudden emergence of lots of like stealth new world order supremacists. All right. Hey, Woz, just thinking, this is for me, just thinking, if you're apprehensive or reticent to make newer videos in the new year, please interview or simply speak candidly with friends and let us join you for the time. Well, thank you very much. I'll see how it goes. It occurred to me, I had an idea last night, actually, as I was falling asleep. I was thinking it might be interesting to have people from Millennial this year, not all of them, obviously, but just a select few, actually interview me. Just put those up online so that then I was the interviewee. I think that might be quite helpful, actually. I think sort of like a reverse millennial.
I think someone once said it when you were interviewed on Red Ice Radio about Brexit, which they said, I'm really pleased to see Millennial Woz as the interviewee. I think it was a very good interview you did about Brexit with Henrik. And I think that would be a really good idea, yeah.
Thank you. I remember that. Because now and then it would be recommended to me on YouTube, obviously before they were banned from YouTube. And the title was Brexit, Only the Beginning. It used to keep sort of haunting me that I'd done. I think it must have, would have been in 2016. Okay. I think it would be good. I think it would be good to have a situation where people ask me questions and I could take my time in answering them without them interfering. You know, that would be quite helpful, I think. So I might do that. Let me know what you all think about that idea of a sort of reverse millennial. Okay. I'm moving forward. Thank you for that suggestion, Gaius. That's very nice of you. Okay, does the guest, does Thomas, put the natural order down to intelligence, martial merit, or a balance of both? Because it sounds like just intelligence, specifically verbal intelligence. Do you put the natural order down to intelligence, specifically verbal, or martial merit? I don't know what he means by martial merit.
Physicality or...
I mean marital merit. Maybe it's a typo.
Oh. Does he not mean like physicality and, you know, bravery and, yes. Physical strength?
Yeah. I think so.
I think ultimately, yes, I'm afraid to say that I believe that intelligence and indeed verbal intelligence is a superior characteristic to physical might. And there's plenty of evidence from this over the years. Ultimately, I was never on the right because like I was some kind of bodybuilder or something. You know, there is the kind of the jock right where you have all these kind of bodybuilders who are on the right. And of course, bodybuilding is good. And I'm glad these people are part of the right. But I would never say that is a reason why I'm on the right. I'm on the right because I believe in hierarchy and I believe in intelligence and intellectual hierarchy and intellectual elitism. As snobbish as that might sound. So I'm definitely a person who's always believed that intelligence is superior to physicality. You know, the Luciferians actually have a saying, which is the strong man controls the weak man and the intelligent man controls the strong man.
Right. Yeah. It's the thing like with Master Blaster in Mad Max 3 where we're, All right. Okay. Well, okay, I think that's it. I think there aren't any more questions. So I suppose, and we have been going for quite a while, so I suppose that's a fairly decent stream that we've done here. I would expect that you probably have some closing words that you'd want to say before we end this.
Oh, yeah.
Shame it away, because I really enjoy talking to you. And I know that we could just go on and on, but I also know that I've got Frodi on in 20 minutes. So.
Yeah, of course, Woz. Well, let me just end by saying this, Woz. I think you're a very polite and lovely boy, because I was very nervous at the start and you worked very hard to make me feel welcome. And you put on this show every year, and it must take an awful amount of energy. It must be, it takes a lot of effort. And you are absolutely brilliant at making people feel at home and welcome, making them feel appreciated, making them feel listened to. So for all that reason, I want to thank you. And I want to encourage everybody who's watching this, please donate to Woz. Give him a super chat or donate to his, on the different platforms, because this is a super thing. And I really think that this is like a Christmas tradition now. And I hope when we get past this revolution, I hope this continues every year, because it's such a great tradition. So I want to thank you, Woz, for putting all this on.
Well, and thank you very much for those kind words, and especially thank you for agreeing to appear this year. I know I really wanted to have you on, and I was worried that you would. I mean, it wouldn't have been the end of the world if you declined, but I'm really glad that you've appeared. So, thank you, Thomas.
Thank you. Yes, you're making it sound like I'm not a 6K subscriber, as if I'm some kind of big YouTuber with better things to do.
No, I think last year I asked you and you declined. So I expected, you'll probably decline this year as well. So, I'm glad that you appeared. So thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and I don't care about how many subscribers you have. I enjoy talking to you in and of itself. So, and there was also, someone said on DLive, I don't want to like this guy, but I do. So there you go, Thomas.
I'll take that.
All right. Well, I'll be back in 20 minutes with Frodi Midyard. In the meantime, Thomas Baden Rice, thank you for taking part in Millennial 2020.
Thank you, Woz, and thank you, Woz, and thank you to the chat. Goodbye.
All right. I'll see you all in about 20 minutes. Bye for now.